According to St. John, the second chapter. And I'll give you a little training. When the word moves into the center of the room, you turn your body towards the word. It's great. No, that doesn't happen very often, so we'll be kind to each other. Now, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. And when the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." But he said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." Then she turned to the servants and she said, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone jars standing there. They were for the Jewish rite of purification, and each one held about 20 or 30 gallons of water. Jesus told the servants, "Fill them with water to the brim." And so they did. And then he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. And when the steward tasted the water that had become wine, he didn't know where it had come from, but those servants did. He called the bridegroom and he said to the bridegroom, "Most people serve the best wine first, and then when everyone's drunk, they serve the inferior wine. But you've kept the best wine for last." Now, Jesus performed this, the first of his signs, at that wedding in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory. And his disciples believed in him. This is the gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. And I'd like to invite the children to join Lori Hansen in the comfy chairs. She's got a great story called Six Dinner Sid. If you like really smart cats, it's a great story for you. Don't miss it. Sid's got it all going on. I like to tell the big people, too, if you ever wonder what that's about, you're welcome to go out there and be what that's about, too. It's great either way. You know what I love about Jesus? He listens to his parents. Being a parent, I really love that about Jesus. He listens to his parents. And you know, Jesus' mother in this case is really between a rock and a hard place. And I don't suspect I'm preaching to anybody in the crowd. You've never been between a rock and a hard place, right? See, she sees the impending disaster and she can't do a thing about it. And having no wine at a wedding really is an impending disaster. It would be kind of a small disaster for us because the celebration after a wedding is about, well, how long? 4 hours, 5 hours, if you're really into it, a day and a half. But in this day, a wedding celebration could last a week or longer. See, a wedding celebration was a celebration for the whole community because in the marriage of two people, the community saw hope for their community. They saw the perpetuation of life in their community. Much the same way we do here when we find out someone here is about to have a baby, like the whole place gets excited, right? Because it's not just like one person or one couple is going to have a baby. It's like we're pregnant. You know what I mean? And then the baby's born and we all celebrate and we watch that little one grow from being in their arms to running around and bringing their offering and then running to blast. And that is life-giving for the whole community. And in the same way, a marriage was life-giving like that, because the presence of young people meant not only that joy of watching children grow, but it also meant there were people to do work, frankly. We enjoy lots of luxuries in life. We don't have to press olives, for example, to get olive oil. We don't have to roll big stones around that thing and crush them, and that's really hard work, right? Most of us don't have to farm the land to have fresh produce. We have a lot of luxuries that people 2,000 years ago didn't have. And so the marriage of two people was a celebration of life and the potential of abundance and hope for the community. And so running out of wine was a big deal. And Jesus' mother looked. She noticed that there was no wine, and she noticed it was going to be a disaster for that celebration, but she was completely incapable of doing anything about it, except to say something to the people who are capable of doing something about it. And so she said to Jesus, "They have no wine." Notice she didn't tell him to do anything about it. She just said, "They have no wine." And he did kind of as children are wont to do. "Why are you telling me that, woman? I don't know if you've ever raised teenagers or young adults. But there's this thing about parents. I don't care who your parents are. There's this thing about parents that we have this kind of vision about how it's going to go if it keeps going the way it's going. And parents who love their children can't keep quiet about that. Parents who love their children kind of point out the impending doom if the track isn't changed or modifications aren't made or behaviors aren't dealt with. It's not like we're omniscient or prophetic. It's just that we sort of have this parental knowing. And so Jesus' mother says they have no wine, and he does as children often do, so what? I love her, you know, because she doesn't say so what. She just lets that sit. She knows he can do something about it. And apparently there have been a lot of conversations about that, because she just lets this one ride. I love her. I wish I could hold my tongue about that. You know, my kids already know what I'm going to say about how it's going. I kind of tell them again anyway, ad nauseum. Right? But she doesn't. She just lets it sit. And then very knowingly, she turns to the ones who serve the wine, and she just says, "Do whatever he tells you to do." And then she apparently walks away. And we don't hear from her again. In fact, in this gospel, she isn't even named. In the whole gospel, her name is never mentioned. And she only appears a couple of times. We'll see her again at the end of the gospel when Jesus' hour has come. And we'll see another side of parenting. But here, she walks away and leaves it in the hands of those that can make a difference. In other words, she trusts. The disaster will come, or it won't, but she's done what she can. Last week, Pastor Phil asked us in his sermon, "Are we going to be coachable?" It's a great question to ask at the start of a year. Are you going to be coachable this year? It's a hard question for parents, for adults, for people who think they know how it goes and are used to their rhythms and cycles. But the question remains, are you going to be coachable? Are you going to be open to things being different, which means you're going to have to change your behavior? are you going to be coachable? And I said at the end of the service that before we get the coaching, we're going to have a bunch of revelation about who the coach is, starting here and starting now. Our coach, it seems, is going to argue with us the way a teenager argues with his mother. You're going to see impending disaster in your life. Are you with me? We always do. You're going to see impending doom and hardship and trouble. And you're going to turn to your coach and tell him, this is the trouble. They have no wine at the wedding. I've lost my job. Looks like I'm going to lose my house. My brother's ill. And apparently, this coach has the wherewithal to say to you, what's that to me? What's that to you and to me? This isn't my hour. This isn't my gig. That's kind of shocking. First thing our coach is going to do is to hear you and say, so what? I love Jesus' mother. She's a great example to us. She says it one time, and she walks away in trust no matter what the response is. She lets the coach sit with it. What does the coach do next? Acts abundantly and extravagantly behind her back. Fill those water jars to the brim, he says. And now draw some out, and it's the best wine you've ever had in your life. 150 gallons of wine. Enough wine, not for a week, but for a month of celebration. Our coach obeys his parents. I love that about him. Doesn't mean he doesn't give them a hard time. When you invite the coach to look into your world and see your impending disaster, the coach sees it. And you know as well as I do, you don't always get the response that you want, particularly not immediately. Sometimes it's all we can do to bring ourselves to this place, dragging ourselves through the door broken, wondering if this God even exists or cares or heard. Particularly when you've been living in your disaster for weeks, yea, months, years. And you begin to doubt your faith. Lesson number one, the coach heard you. The coach is arranging things behind your back. Maybe the stone jars aren't standing there and they have to be moved into your home. Maybe there's no stewards and they have to be gathered to fill them with water. The coach heard you. The coach is acting extravagantly and abundantly behind the scenes. Are you going to be coachable, and are you going to trust the coach? Second thing revealed about the coach, or the next thing revealed, I don't know how many things I said already, is that the coach reveals God's character to us. They're out of wine, so here's enough wine for the whole celebration and for seven more just like it. This coach is interested in us having a feast, an extravagant feast, an abundant feast, with way more riches than you asked for in the first place. Whatever it is that you've been living in, whatever that impending disaster, you can trust that the coach is working behind the scenes, gathering what's needed to be a waymaker for you. Need to be a waymaker for us. Because ultimately, God is interested in us being one great people of God, gathered at a feast and a celebration, not in some hereafter, by and by in the sky, but now, while we're still experiencing the disaster. Apparently, what this coach wants from us is to stand in the situation we're in, to deal with the circumstances with which we're dealing, clear that we're heard, certain that things are being done behind the scenes to make a way for us, and celebrating that outcome before we have it. That's how one great people of God live. With their eyes over there, the thing solved, and marching towards it with assurance, knowing when we get there, there's six stone jars filled with wine, all of your troubles cared for, a way made for you and all those you love, peace in our world, in our time, leaders that care. Can you see it? Now is the feast and celebration. Now is the feast of the Lamb once slain. That's our coach asking for us faith and trust in the kingdom that's already at work. It's just behind our back, out of sight, behind the scenes. But be assured, it's done.